You're tuned in to the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Well, today is Valentine's Day, and yep, we're leaning all the way in. We're talking about how Washingtonians date and find love. These days, it's easy to sign up for a website like JDate or an app like Bumble, but it can still be hard to manage all the options and figure out how to really be yourself online. That's where today's modern matchmakers come in. Joining us in studio is Anish Shin, articles editor at the Washington Post magazine, who edits the much-loved and much-debated column Date Lab. Anis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Anis, for those who are unfamiliar, what is the Washington Post Date Lab column and how has it evolved over the years?
Well, it started in 2006, so we've been going for a while now. And we basically, people apply. We have a database and a very lengthy application online. And we match people, just us humans, no algorithm, no computer. And we send them on a blind date and we pay for dinner. So
who is we who matches the couples?
Well, it's evolved over the years. We once used a monkey just to see how that would go.
Well, how did that go?
The monkey did okay. He did about as as we usually do. But it used to be the editors, and then we had a dedicated matchmaker for a long time, and then I took over a couple years ago, and so it's a mix. I do some of the matches, and our writers do some of the matches.
What are applicants usually looking for in terms of compatibility?
Well, I mean, we ask a very long list of questions, and it's changed in the sense that dating apps have come along, and they ask far fewer questions than we do. So we ask things like, you know, everything from what's the first thing you did in the morning to your favorite books to your absolute dream date. So we kind of look at all those things to see what people are looking for, but it varies a lot.
Loyal readers of the column are often frustrated by the lackluster dates and this common refrain at the end of your columns. Quoting here, no further contact. Are there success stories that you have to share?
There are. We've had, I think, 4 or 5 marriages. Not lately, not since I've been on it. I mean, even when the column started, their measure of success was really whether they made it to a second date. So we're very humble. We do not expect that we are making lifetime matches, but we hope so.
800-433-8850. Do you think you're good at matching up friends and family? What does it take to spot a good pairing? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. There have also been terrible dates, and it's what, in your opinion, were the worst?
Oh, well, the legendarily worst one was the woman went to the bathroom and didn't come back. We call it the great bathroom escape.
Ooh, ouch.
Yes, that was the worst.
There are readers who think that you purposefully pair incompatible couples for a better story because some people think that makes a better story. What do you have to say about that?
Well, from the beginning and through today, there's a rule. We don't do that, actually. We don't match people for the sake of the story, which it's hard to believe from a bunch of journalists, but the story is secondary. We're actually trying to match people. And it's true, a lot of them, you know, they have an okay time and it doesn't work out. But I think that's true of, as most daters probably know, that's probably true of dating in general. So,
yeah. Well, Anis is a magazine editor first and a matchmaker second. So let's now hear from a professional matchmaker. Joining us by phone is Jamie Bernstein, professional matchmaker at 3-Day Rule. Jamie, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Jamie, what does the process of matchmaking look like at 3-Day Rule?
Sure. So 3-Day Rule is a high-touch luxury matchmaking service, but we do have options for everybody. So we have both free and paid options. But it's really about getting to know the individual dater, what they're looking for, what's worked, what hasn't, and then utilizing, you know, my own expertise, intuition, and a mix of on- and off-paper qualities to find a great fit.
What's the meaning behind your company's name, 3-Day Rule?
Yeah, so the name 3-Day Rule comes from the age-old wise tale that a man should wait 3 days before calling a woman who he's interested in. But we say throw out those old rules and, you know, just get serious about it and give up the game.
How much do you have to know about a client in order to be able to match them successfully?
So it is a process. So it's definitely about spending time getting to know them, what makes them tick. but it's also about using, you know, my own intuition and years of expertise, kind of honing all of that together to go ahead and use my resources and find a great fit.
Well, let me talk with Stephanie in Woodley Park before I return to you, Jamie. Stephanie, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hello, Kojo. I just love you so much. Happy Valentine's Day to you and your
happy
guest.
Valentine's Day to you, Stephanie.
And I have two stories. First of all, everyone calls me a Yenta, but I'm Italian, so I'm an Italian Yenta. I fixed up my old next door neighbor when I lived in Kensington years ago with my nephew. They both went to school in Montreal, two different schools. Did not know each other, but I knew she loved Latino guys. My nephew is Latino, and she loved musicians. And he is just the most adorable kid. And I fixed him up, and they're getting married. So I just wanted to tell you that.
I could have used your services when I went to school in Montreal, but that's another story.
There you go. And then another thing, I love OkCupid, although I hope they don't ask me to do a commercial for them because I don't really want to do that. But I'm 53, I'm divorced, found the love of my life on OkCupid. He is hysterical and funny. We're both very political, very progressive. He loves me for me. We call each other, and he lives in La Jolla, California. We call each other ranting and raving about politics. He's the best.
This is the perfect relationship for you, ranting and raving about politics
ranting
every day?
Yes, well, I won't go into that because I know that's a whole other subject. But
well, love comes in a variety of forms, obviously. But thank you very much for sharing that with us. Jamie, the reason why I wanted to have Stephanie share that with us is because there are people who are unconvinced of matchmaking services, and Stephanie obviously thinks of herself as a good matchmaker. What's the benefit of having a stranger trying to set you up as opposed to a friend or family member?
Absolutely. So having somebody who's not directly, you know, on your team, meaning a friend or family member, can really look at you in a way that's not biased. So I'm able to be, you know, friendly and friends with my clients, but also tell them what they need to hear, help them get outside their dating comfort zone, which is huge, think outside the box, take risks when it comes to dating, and tell them feedback that maybe a friend wouldn't share, you know, always helping them grow and, you know, really reach their capacity as a dater.
Any success or disaster stories that you'd like to share?
Yeah, so a great success story. One of my clients who's married came to me and said she wanted, you know, 6 feet tall, Ivy League pedigree, all these very specific things. And now she's married to somebody, you know, who's 5'8", doesn't have that Ivy League pedigree. But one of the main things was humor. They both have this really quirky, offbeat, fun sense of humor. And I am a big believer that humor is one of the most authentic parts of who we are. So when you can connect, be yourself, and laugh, that's one of the best things that connects people long term.
Not everyone uses a matchmaker like Jamie or gets picked for DateLab. These days, online dating helps people take a little more control over their love lives, but you might be new to this and maybe a little uncomfortable. That's where our next guest comes in. Erica Etten is the founder of A Little Nudge, an online matchmaking service. Erica, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Erica, what does being an online matchmaker entail?
Good question. So I help people market themselves online, for starters. So if you've ever tried online dating, you know it's really hard to write about yourself and to look at yourself, what you write, your pictures objectively. So I help people market themselves well to make sure they're putting their best foot forward online. Then online dating is really time consuming. So I offer services that save people that time. I help search for potential matches. I write messages and I even plan dates for people. So I really try to eliminate all of the obstacles that are getting in people's way. And once I get rid of those, they can be more successful at online dating.
Well, your matchmaking enterprise started when you were trying to set up yourself.
Sure.
When did you start online dating? What was your approach and how did that run into turn into running your own business?
I was a very early adopter of online dating. I started in 2001 when nobody did online dating. I just thought it seemed like an interesting way to meet people. And my background's actually in economics. So over the years, I decided to start a spreadsheet of my own online dating experience. Initially, it was to make sure I didn't write to the same person twice. But then I thought, I can track things on here. I can make little tweaks here and there and see if my response rate differs. If somebody did respond to me, what could I do to make sure a date came to fruition? So once I started tracking that and improving my own success at online dating, my friends started asking me questions and asking for advice. And one thing led to another. I quit my job in finance and started the business in early 2011.
And after 3 months or so, you found yourself being successful in that business.
Yeah, I don't usually take a step back and, you know, pat my own back because I'm always in the weeds, but it became profitable in the third month, and I worked my tail off and still do. I love my job.
Well, it obviously started with Erica turning her own dating into a science, but here is a question for you, and maybe for you, Anishin, from Matt in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Matt, your turn.
Hi, I was just wondering about the guest perspective on online dating, whether or not it's going to shape future populations differently and is different from, of course, traditional dating ways. And how far are we into the future in using, or how far along are we, and what do they project biometric information being used for data or for dating?
First, you, Erica.
Well, there have been studies on, you know, they have the T-shirt test, you know, if you... Sorry to be gross, but if you smell someone's sweaty T-shirt, are the pheromones working for you or not? So there are tests like that already. I don't think that meeting someone online versus meeting someone, quote, in real life will change the future of dating. It's just that you have more information about someone going in. So there have been studies that have shown that compatibility is actually higher when you meet someone online because you already have a number of things in common that you don't have to worry about once you meet that person.
Annis?
Well, we do blind dates so that people actually don't have that much information. But I also find, I mean, we're not coaching people as some of these other professionals are. But I would say that a lot of times people don't know themselves that well. So there's other data, biometrical data, or whatever, something that could help boost their ability to find the right person. I think that's good.
Indeed, a lot of people do this, Erica, for friends. They help select photos, read through bids. What makes your services different than just going to a friend for advice?
Well, similar to what Jamie said on the phone, you need an objective perspective. I mean, you ask your friends to look at your pictures. Your friends already like you, right? So they're not going to tell you, well, you know, you have an extra line on your face in this picture or that shirt isn't as flattering on you. I can say those things. And in fact, people hire me to say those things. So I find myself... I take pictures of my clients, too, and I find myself giving the advice, you know, particularly for women, I say, don't wear something as flowy. Make sure you're wearing something that actually fits your body so people can, you know, see your body type. I've had to tell people things about their teeth, and I suggested once someone change their nail polish color, things like that, things that friends will never say, really comes in handy when I can say it because I am coming from that objective place, and I only have their best interest at heart. So if I'm giving you advice, it's because I know it'll work.
Don't you ever get angry responses when you...
Well, I always ask first, do I have permission to be honest? That is my question that I always ask, and I've only had one person in 8 years say no, and I just shut my mouth after that.
Dishonesty for that person is the best policy.
or nothing.
Here is Amy in Antigua. Amy, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Happy Valentine's Day, Kojo. Hi, Erica.
Hi.
Amy, you are in Antigua?
Yes, I am.
Are you in St. John's?
Yes, I am in St. John for my birthday.
I was there a month ago.
My goodness. You have great taste.
Stop hanging around Heritage Key. That's all I'm going to tell you. But go right ahead.
Well, Kojo, I have to tell you, so Erica, first of all, is amazing at her job, and she's somebody that I found through a coworker. So I'm a physician, and one of my coworkers went to college with Erica. And a couple years ago, I wanted to start online dating, but I'm very, very busy with my job. I'm a single parent, and I really did not know how to approach this for women, sometimes online dating is a little overwhelming because you create a profile and you can be sort of flooded with responses and there's an incredible variability of quality. So I sought out Erica to help me essentially with the logistics of how to make this work. And Erica took a lot of time to get to know me. She just had coffee with me and we talked about what I was looking for. But she also got to know me as a person so that when she set things up for me, she was able to really find experiences that I would like. And it wasn't that I had a spark with everybody that I went out with. It's that as we worked together over time, my confidence got better and better and better because everybody that she sent me out with had something to offer. It was a little bit, this is what I tell my friends, it's like having a friend say, hey, I know this really great movie. You're really going to enjoy this. Here's your ticket. It's in Theater 12. Go have a good time.
Because and you just do. Because that friend knows what you like. May we ask,
exactly.
Are you currently in Antigua with someone that you met through Erica?
I'm not. I'm actually with a very good longtime girlfriend of mine. But okay. I did meet someone through Erica who has been texting me essentially nonstop since I've been here. So that's a good thing.
Good. And thank you very much for sharing that story with us. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a find. Catch me a catch. Night after night in the dark, I'm alone. So find me a match of my own.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. We're talking matchmaking with Anish Shin, the articles editor of the Washington Post magazine. Erica Etten is the founder of A Little Nudge, an online matchmaking service. We've also been talking with Jamie Bernstein, a professional matchmaker at 3-Day Rule. And now that we have talked with Erica Etten, joining us now is a former client of hers, Richard Jaffe. Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Richard, what's your relationship history?
It's been pretty good. I was married for about 26 years and separated and divorced 2-3 years ago. And when I was ready to start dating, I just happened to go to a meeting of a local divorce and separation support group, and it was about online dating, and Erica was the host.
You said when you were ready to start dating, how did you know you were ready? How did you know you wanted to re-enter the dating pool, and how did you know that online matchmaking was the way to do it?
So certainly, the end of my marriage, there was, issues there. But I wanted to get back out in the real world and have fun, take advantage of all the great entertainment and cultural activities around here, and wanted to do it with somebody special. I also realized I've been out of the dating world for years and years. I did not know all the new technology and websites, and I needed more than a little nudge. I needed a good kick in the butt.
So that's what you got from Erica?
Yes. following up on what Amy said, Erica was great as far as being very honest, telling me exactly my best approach, what to put into my profile, great photos that I could put on there, and telling me what to expect when I was actually out there in the online dating world.
Well, how did that all work out? What's your relationship status now?
Right now, I am pretty heavily involved with somebody. It's going along great.
Ooh, good for you. Congratulations. Erica, what was Richard like when you first met him?
Pretty much like he is now. I mean, he was nervous. He was very apprehensive about the process. Certainly over 50% of my clients have been married before, and I find that it's the most rewarding for me, and it's the most useful when I work with clients who have been out of the scene for a long time and just need a little extra hand-holding in terms of what's new in the dating world, how are things going now, what do you text, what is this? Richard, like a lot of my clients, was just nervous about all of that and needed someone in his corner, and I was really glad I got to be that person because in addition to writing the profile and taking the pictures, you know, I consider myself a coach. And so whenever questions arise or anything like that, you know, do I call her now? Do I text her now? Do I wait the 3 days? No. I can be there to answer those questions.
Well, what lessons would you say listeners can learn from an experience like Richard's?
I would say if you haven't been online dating yet, it's certainly worth trying. Richard and I were talking earlier that I encouraged him to be honest in his profile, not just honest, of course, about, you know, age and height and all of that stuff, but honest in terms of who you really are as a person. A lot of people try to appeal to everybody. That's why you get generic profiles like, I love to laugh and have fun. I'm just as comfortable in a black dress as I am jeans and a t-shirt. That does nothing. I'd rather hear your quirks, your idiosyncrasies, you know, that you like to go to the Kennedy Center to see sheer madness at least 3 times a year. You know, I don't know where I got that one from, but but the things that make you you, that's what you should be putting out there, because you will get the response you want if you're true to yourself.
Here's Diane in Beltsville, Maryland. Diane, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, I think it's appropriate that I follow up on your statement you just made, because that's exactly the problem I've been having for most of my life. I've done the online dating, and I went to the dating coaches and the stuff, and it just never, ever, never worked for me. And it just didn't seem to be grounded in reality, like that last statement that you just made, because there are a lot of what I call closet creeps out here. And you don't usually find them because they're very good at cloak and dagger. You don't usually find this until well into you're into the relationship, and by then it's too late. So I've considered maybe perhaps I should do my own site or do this own business where, you know, I should perhaps do this myself, because so many of these places just aren't grounded in reality like that. And I'm a person who's 59. I'm at the end of my life. I don't have time for games. I'm looking for someone to finish my life with, because there's not going to be any life after this. I won't want to hear now and until the end. And I'm just not finding it because people aren't grounded in reality.
Well, if at 59 you think you're at the end of your life, then you probably think my life has ended. But Erica doesn't. Erica doesn't obviously think that you're at the end of your life.
No way. I mean, my biggest demographic is women over 60, actually. And I'm working with a lovely 82-year-old man right now. So you are nowhere near the end. And I think a lot of it is not generalizing. Yes, there are a lot of, we'll just say, quote, interesting people out there who you wouldn't necessarily want to meet. But if you close yourself off from meeting those people, you're also closing yourself off from meeting the really good ones. It does take some digging, though. And ultimately, you don't know who someone is until you meet them in person. So I always recommend getting from online to the in-person date sooner rather than later, because you just can't tell chemistry. You can't tell if someone is who they say they are until you meet in person. So I would just keep trying.
And thank you for your call, Diane. We got an email from Amanda who writes, online dating with apps is great, especially for introverted people like myself. It's so easy to make decisions in relationships you know won't work right away based off the conversations. It gives you an accepted social barrier so you don't have to worry about awkwardly walking away from an in-person conversation. When I was single after a long relationship, I tried every app and became a dating app guru for my friends. I recommend it always to those open to it. It's the easiest way to talk and find people you actually want to talk to. Then if you get over it, you just delete. Thank you very much for your email, Amanda. We move on now to Nizar, who is in Greensboro, North Carolina. Nizar, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm a 27 single male. I just got out of something recently. And I don't know, this whole online dating thing, the Bumble and the Tinder, it's just not been working out as I expected, you know. The funny thing is I've actually made more friends on it than anything serious, but I've kind of had to lower my expectations in some sense, because I feel like I go on a great date and then it's either, you know, they want something really serious, or can't we just go out and have a couple of drinks and have fun? But I think just they're over-expecting so much. It's really created problems in that sense. In my experience so far, I just thought, I want to get your opinion on that, and I don't know, it's been overwhelming.
Well, Annis, a lot of Date Lab applicants seem like Nizar to be in their 20s. Does it make a difference? Because what Nizar seems to be suggesting is that when you're in your 20s, you have a lot more choices that you might want to make. So you're not necessarily looking for someone with whom you want a long-term relationship immediately.
Well, people apply with different expectations for sure, but I think generally that's true. The younger people seem to act like there's like this infinite sea of people out there, and the older folks are much clearer about what they want.
Are there a lot of older applicants who are re-entering the dating pool after a long relationship at Dateland?
Yeah, we get everything. I mean, I would like to say a lot of people say that we have too many 20-somethings, but it's a reflection of the pool that we get. So I encourage anybody over 40, please apply.
Thank you very much for your call, Nizar. Joining us now by phone is Callie Harris. She's a professional matchmaker, also at 3-Day Rule. Callie, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Kojo. Thanks. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, Callie. How do needs change based on the age of your client?
That's a great question. I don't think specific needs in terms of what you're looking for in a partner and in a relationship change. I think at different ages, we prioritize different things. A lot of my younger clients are looking for someone who is social and who can hang out with their crew of friends and who, you know, might want to go out a couple nights during the weekday. And some of my older clients, you know, are more focused on, finding someone who is intellectually compatible. Not that my younger clients are not focused on that too, but, that oftentimes comes up first, or finding someone who has traveled the world, who is cultured, or who is very self-aware. So those things sort of come up more frequently depending upon age, but I don't think in terms of needs that actually changes much.
What special considerations, if any, do you make for clients re-entering the dating pool after, say, a divorce?
Well, special considerations. I certainly try to understand what place they are in terms of dating and if they are really ready to date again, because I think that's very important. I think after something like a divorce or a long-term relationship, you do really need to take a step back, reflect, see what worked, what didn't, and then, try and figure out where you are in terms of what you're looking for.
Matchmaking, of course, has been around forever. In certain religious communities, it has assisted singles in finding a partner that shares their values, faith, or cultural background. Joining us now is Asad Ansari. He is the founder of Beyond Chai, a matchmaking image consulting and relationship consulting service for Muslims. Asad, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You created Beyond Chai. It's based on the needs you saw in your own life when you were looking to get married. What did you notice about the dating landscape for local Muslims?
For Muslims, you know, we're a fairly small percentage of population in the U.S., and finding someone, you know, relative to where you are geographically speaking, it's always been a challenge. You know, I grew up in a small town in North Carolina, and finding someone within that region, it's been complicated. So I've tried, when I was looking to get married, I've tried every possible avenue, apps, sites, on and off for a few years, until it started, by luck, I was introduced to my wife now through one of my co-founders, Romana, so it worked out well.
Was their co-founder just a friend at the time?
No, actually, I did not know her.
Oh.
Yeah, actually, got a lead through her cousin that I was friends with, yeah.
What does Beyond Chai do to assist local Muslims looking to avoid typical dating challenges?
I think the challenges that we see are very similar to, some of the ones that we've been talking about. The apps and the sites, they generally, do not seem to work out. I think, it's hard to filter out, candidates that are serious. So it's important for us to, rely on other avenues, and when we were considering, app sites and apps, we felt like there was a strong need. And that's when we started, looking at branching out to something more personal, high touch. And that's where the idea of Beyond Chai came about.
Richard and Erica, you both have experiences with JDate, which is an online dating site and app for Jewish singles. Richard, you actually used it exclusively. Why did it appeal to you over other services?
Originally, I thought it would be my best initial base to start out a relationship, having similar backgrounds, upbringing and so forth. I have to say, actually, over the last 3 years, probably half of the women I have dated have either not been Jewish, I met outside of the site, or non-Jewish women were on J-Date. And I had no, you know, issues or problems with that. And everything's been working out great.
Erica?
So I always encourage clients to have just a handful, if that, of non-negotiables. And one of those often is religion. So if there is a niche site out there, whether it's J-Date or Christian Mingle or Catholic Match, and that's something that's really important to you to find in a partner, then I do recommend doing those niche sites. So J-Date was actually the first site I did back in 2001, because at that time I thought meeting someone Jewish was important to me and a partner. After I, you know, did a lot of a self-assessment and learned more about myself, I realized that that wasn't as important to me, but it's still important to a lot of people. And so I do encourage those niche sites if you know that that's something you need in your relationship.
Asad, one thing you try to do at Beyond Chai is to encourage clients to see beyond physical appearance. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, when we first started out, again, you know, we were new to the whole idea. We've tried everything. And, you know, when people were looking to get married, they would come in and send me this long list of things that they wanted, you know, 6'1", Ivy League graduate, and you know, all that good stuff that everyone wants, right? And then we realized that, you know, that wasn't driving the success for us. So we decided that, you know, we really have to change people's attitude and behavior and the outlook towards the way they see marriage. So what we've done is we've incorporated other ancillary services into our matchmaking process. So there's a lot of coaching that goes into it. We want to, you know, one of the first things that we start off with is not so much of what do you want, is what do you have to offer. Right. It's very important because oftentimes it's, you know, what I want, not, you know, what you have to offer. So we start the conversations on why. Why are you looking to get married? What is it that you want to do? What is it that you want to accomplish in life? So those things are very important. And I think, you know, and what we're trying to get at is, okay, finding someone that they can complement with if they have a certain goal in life. Let's find a partner that will help you complement you and help you get to where you want to go be. Right. So that's very important. And when we launched a campaign, Look Beyond, we're starting to see a higher success rate because we're going moving away from, you know, not just the optics, looking at deeper meaning in a relationship, right? Compatibility, you know, so.
But we are living in, surrounded by a society that focuses very, very heavily on physical appearance. And in Date Lab and in real life, it's not uncommon to hear that someone won't go on a second date because they didn't feel that initial spark. On the first date, Anis, is a spark really an indication of physical attractiveness, or is it, whether it's that or not, a good indicator of compatibility?
I mean, a lot of times, obviously, that is generally the deal breaker. It's like, oh, he's not my type, or, you know, there was no chemistry. Which I totally understand, obviously, but, you know, I'm very sympathetic to what Asad was saying because there's certain things that people fixate on that I think if they spent more time with the person, they would overlook. Like height. People are so fixated on height.
Obsessed.
Yes. I'm not really sure why, but.
800-433-8850. Do you think it's realistic to get people to see beyond physical looks when it comes to dating, or are we just going to be drawn to what we were attracted to in the first place? I'm Kojo Namdi.
If you didn't know that you were right for me, then there's nothing I can say. Tried to call you out to spend some time to see, but somebody's in your way. Tried to let it go and say I'm over you. I'm not over you, but I'm trying. Party for one, if you don't care about me, I'll just dance for myself.
Welcome back. We're talking on this Valentine's Day about matchmaking, and we got an email from Adam who writes, "Online dating is a disaster zone. The help of real-life facilitators or matchmakers are helpful if they are actively working on your behalf and take the time to get to know you. Otherwise, they're little more than business serving not their customers but themselves, preying on the human condition to separate people from their money." He says he was actually approached by one of our guests, Jamie, who's on the phone earlier, but care to comment on that, Erica?
Oh, well, I would be curious to know if this person has ever worked with a matchmaker, because to make a statement like that would be unfounded if you have not worked with someone. There is a wide range. I think any matchmaker will tell you there is a wide range of skill, professionalism, expertise in the matchmaking field. So just like with dating, you have to find someone to work with who you're compatible with. So that's really important. I'm sorry if you lost money paying for a matchmaker who didn't work for you. That is unfortunate. And I think sometimes that's why matchmakers have a bad reputation, because of one person who does that. But I do encourage you, if you do want to work with someone, find someone who's the right fit for you, whether it's an online dating coach like myself or a matchmaker like Anis or Nicole.
And Adam says, I'm signed up with Modern Matchmaking Service, saw you at Sinai, where matchmakers actively seek to set you up with someone who really fits you for a nominal $15 monthly fee. Only if a match results in marriage do couples give a voluntary honorarium. And here now is Wendy in Arlington. Wendy, your turn.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to share, as someone who is coming out of a 10-year marriage, what it's like to go through online dating. I decided to online date somewhat soon after my marriage ended, not because I was ready to get back into dating, but I felt like I really needed a confidence boost, especially when there's children involved, not knowing whether you're desirable and where do you even start. And so in that sense, it was a very rewarding experience because it gave me the confidence I needed in myself to figure out what I needed and wanted going forward. I would say on the negative side, what it felt like when I started having chemistry with people was that I was constantly feeling like I was on hold until someone better came along. And I think that is a product of online dating, where you can, without anyone knowing, date several people at the same time. And you're sort of waiting for the lottery to hit for you before you know whether you have a true match or not. And so I guess my suggestion to folks out there would be to be patient. And that, my experience is that people are throwing a lot of things at the wall and hoping something will stick, which can be kind of a bummer.
Speaking of patient, Asad, is that one of the things you have to advise your clients about?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think patience is very important. And I think, people, think that, you hire a matchmaker and they'll get the job done. it's not that easy. There's a lot of effort that goes into finding someone that's suitable, compatible. You may not see the results right away, but there is a llot of effort going in. So patience is absolutely very, very important. We've had a couple clients, including guys, who've been with us for a year and a half, paying monthly, right, and just not seeing the results. But they were patient, and they've had, very good success towards the end.
Well, that suggests to me I need to get back to talking about the spark issue again, because spark suggests a lack of patience. Erica is looking for a spark reel. Same question to you, Richard. Or is it a cop-out when you just don't find someone attractive?
Looking for a spark reel, sure. Is finding one real? I don't know. So, of course, a lot of my clients give that as the reason for not going on a second date. I didn't feel a spark. I didn't feel that connection. Generally, spark to me, if you tell me you don't have a spark, I just assume that means I wasn't attracted to my date, right? I just take those as synonymous. I always say, though, the criteria for going on a second date should not be whether you have this firework moment. It's more, do I want to have one more conversation with this person? Because I certainly know a lot of relationships where the first date was nothing spectacular because the person was nervous. You were both nervous. But by the second date, things have calmed down. You really get a sense of who this other person is, and you're able to make a connection there. Generally, when you have that spark, you are overlooking everything else about this person because you have your rose color. I want to kiss this person, whatever you want to do. But you're not looking at, are you actually compatible? So sometimes even having too much of that spark is a red flag because there might be other things that you're just missing.
Richard, how did that spark thing work for you?
Well, I'd actually have to say I'm a little bit of an anomaly in that I almost always gave everybody I would date, either from initial in person or on J-date, at least 3 dates before I really would figure out, is this a possibility? Where is this going to go? For me, the deal breaker is humor. I've been on dates where over an hour and a half of dinner, did not laugh once. And that that forget it. I don't even see the point in going in a second date if that's going to happen.
What, are you looking for a date with an onion writer? Is that what?
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Yeah. Wow. Do you know any?
Hannes, how do the date lab writers factor looks into the matchmaking process?
Oh, that's interesting. Our group of writers that we have now all started around the same time I did, and their selection process has evolved too. In fact, one of them has sort of given up on the personality matching, and she's gone purely on the pictures now. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, the photos can also be deceptive. Unfortunately, we don't have somebody like Erica, like, taking the pictures. And so sometimes people send us, you know, pictures where they're, like, extremely far away or, you know, mm-hmm. we can't really see what they look like. So that's, you know, can't do everything on the pictures, so.
I got an email from Emmanuel who says, after a bitter divorce in 2014, I met my wife and soulmate on Catholic Match. Later found out we had so much in common. Grew up in the same town in Nigeria and even went to high school with two of her brothers, and our paths had never crossed. I couldn't be happier in my marriage today. Think of this, a country with more than 150 million people, and he goes to Catholic Match and finds somebody who grew up in the same town and went to school with her brothers. Well, good for you, Emmanuel, and thank you for sharing your story with us. On now to Sabrina in Great Falls, Virginia. Sabrina, your turn.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share my story. You know, my husband and I met about 13 years ago, and actually a few more. Anyway, we've been married for about 13 years. But before that, in 2003, 2004, I was online dating, and I did, you know, JDate, I did eHarmony, Match, all of the different ones. And it was not successful, and I was so frustrated. And then I ended up meeting my husband hiking on a Sierra Club hike. And, you know, I just want to say that folks, to get out and just do what you love to do, and the right kind of people will be attracted to, you know, to that. And then come to find out, my husband and I were both on the same sites at the same time, and we were never matched, and we're really well matched. So there's something to, you know, letting the universe take its course.
Okay, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. Ed in Bethesda emails, I have not taken a good photo in 30-plus years. I'm 54 now because of droopy eyelid and a lazy eye due to eye surgery when I was a teen. Actually, worse now because of two more recent operations. Anyway, I like the concept of online dating, but no one is going to swipe right when they see my photo. Asad, when clients come back to you and say, I just wasn't physically attracted to this person, what do you say back?
I think you have to give them a chance. You know, one of the things that we started doing is we're now hosting game nights. And the concept of game nights is really centered around, you know, not so much on, you know, the looks or, you know, how tall you are and what profession you come from. You know, the way we structure it is that, you know, we place the candidates in groups, and the attention, the focus is on the activity. And we want it to be a natural, organic way of connecting with people. And that seems to, you know, at least from the few that we've done so far, that seems to, you know, be working really well for people that are, you know, may not be photogenic, right, for the lack of a better word. So I think, you know, my advice would be to try some, you know, more connecting with people in person, and, you know, and really, you know, just be patient. I think, you know, that's important.
Anis Ed in Bethesda seems to be saying, can we take the photo out of the equation altogether? Can you?
Well, I mean, in that sense, we, you know, that's kind of our MO. We are doing it for you so people don't make those judgments. I mean, I do think that the apps are very much heavily influenced a lot by the photo. And as I said before, like about height and other things, I think people sometimes focus on the superficial things a little bit too much.
Erica, who would you say is your ideal client? What makes someone, either easy to work with or a great catch?
Wow. Well, I'm lucky in that I have a lot of ideal clients. But what makes someone a great catch really has nothing to do with who they are. It's more where they are in life. Are they ready, like Richard said earlier, are they ready to be out there dating? For example, if I ask someone what they're looking for and I get a lot of negative comments back, I'm not looking for this, I'm not looking for that, I'm not looking for that. It indicates to me that the client isn't ready to be out there yet, because someone positive and ready says, I am looking for this. Also, somewhat, look, I manage people's online dating accounts for them. I mean, it's really interesting. That's how the online matchmaking works. I'll actually go into your account and write your messages and delete the messages in your inbox that aren't appropriate. So I find that I work best with people who trust that I know what I'm doing, because when someone hires me and then tries to micromanage me, it gets very frustrating, because I can do my job well if you let me do my job. That's why we hire experts, right? That's why I have an accountant. So my ideal client is the person who has the ability to go out to date. They have a great personality. They're ready, but they might lack the time. And so they hire me to do it for them.
Email from Sarah. My boyfriend of 3 years and I met on Tinder, of all places. We're about as opposite as can be. Me, a bubbly, outgoing mural artist, and he, a stoic, reserved economist. After a lot of skepticism from my friends and family about the Tinder scene, I'm happy to say we're planning our move together to California to live our lives together under the sun. Just goes to show that opposites sometimes really do attract. And here now is Kathy in Washington, D.C. Kathy, your turn.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to speak to the question of whether dating changes over time. And I've been divorced for about 15 years. I had a 3-year-old when I got divorced. She's now 18. And I would say that for me, it's changed really dramatically, because when I hit the point where I realized I wouldn't have any more kids, I stopped looking for somebody who I might do that with, who might be somebody who I would marry and have additional children with. And now I think I'm looking for somebody who just I can have more fun with. And it's just that's really changed the equation dramatically for me.
People's needs change over time, Erica?
Definitely. Your needs change as you have children, as they leave the home. You have more time on your hands. You know yourself better. So absolutely. Again, I can't remember who said it earlier. Like, at the core, you don't really change what you're looking for, but your priorities do skew differently as you get older.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Erica Etten is the founder of A Little Nudge, an online matchmaking service. Erica, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Anna Shin is the articles editor at the Washington Post magazine. And Anna, I, like a whole lot of other people, are absolutely addicted to Dateland. Oh, Anna, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Richard Jaffe is a former client of Erica's at A Little Nudge. Richard, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Asad Ansari is the founder of Beyond Chai, a matchmaking image consulting and relationship counseling service for Muslims. Asad, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Jamie Bernstein and Callie Harris are both professional matchmakers at 3-Day Rule. Thank you both for joining us. Today's show on matchmaking was produced by Ruth Tam. You can find a link to the Date Lab column on our website, kojoshow.org. You can find a link to all of the services, Beyond Chai, A Little Nudge, Date Lab, at our website, kojoshow.org. And our guest, Erica Etten, wrote a guest blog post for us, debunking DC's top dating myths. You can find it at kojoshow.org/blog. Coming up on tomorrow's Politics Hour, we sit down with Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks and Alexandria City Council Member Kanek Aguirre for the region's latest political news. That all starts tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening. I'm Kojo Nambi.
The Kojo Nambi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Julie Deppenbrock, and Margaret Barthel. Our managing producer is Angelisa Schrobstorff, and our senior producer is Mana Kashvi. Our intern is Sydney Grannon, and our engineer is Josephine Neonai. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Nambi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.